You are listening to the audio edition of The Economist.
Still in the leaders section.
The global economy. Another year of living dangerously. Turmoil in the Middle East and disaster in Japan arouse economic angst. Central banks must not make it worse.
This was supposed to be a stress-free year for the global economy. By January, the financial crisis had faded and Europe's sovereign debt crisis seemed less acute. America's economy was resurgent. Investors piled into equities and sold some of the government bonds they'd bought for troubled times. If there was a worry, it was that emerging economies would grow too quickly, inflating commodity prices. The year without crisis is not to be. First, Arabian upheaval put oil markets on edge. Then, earthquake, tsunami and a nuclear accident clobbered the world's third largest economy. How much of a setback to growth do these twin crises represent? And how should economic policymakers react to them? Japan's share of world output has been shrinking for decades, but at 9% it remains large enough for the hit to the country's growth to subtract noticeably from global output. Then there are the ripple effects on the rest of the world. Japan is a large, in some cases the sole, supplier of intermediate goods to the world's electronics and automotive industries, from the hardened glass on Apple's iPad to gearboxes in Volkswagens. Many makers of such parts have had to slow or halt shipments because of damaged roads, power cuts, or the loss of components from their own suppliers. The effects have spread well beyond Japan, causing shutdowns from South Korea to Spain. Still, the history of such disasters is that much of that lost production is eventually recovered, and reconstruction delivers a fillip to subsequent growth. Pinpointing the impact of Arab political turmoil is complicated by the fact that oil prices were already rising, thanks to a brighter global economic outlook. Nonetheless, a good portion of this year's 25% increase seems due to worries over supplies. A rule of thumb holds that a 10% increase in the price of oil trims 0.2 percentage points from global growth. At the start of the year, the world looked likely to grow by 4 to 4.5%. A crude estimate is that the two crises will subtract between a quarter and half a percentage point from that. That may not capture the full effect. Crises, by their nature, generate clouds of uncertainty. Businesses postpone capital spending and hiring until the clouds clear. Investors seek the safety of bonds and lose their taste for equities. Economic policymakers can't make peace between Arab rulers and their people or stabilise Japan's nuclear reactors, but they can minimise the collateral damage. The greatest burden is on the Bank of Japan. Its efforts to cure deflation over the past 15 years have too often been timid. That could not be said of its rapid response to the tsunami. It poured cash into the banking system in a preemptive strike against panic hoarding. And it expanded its purchases of government and corporate debt and equities. Still more quantitative easing can keep bond yields from rising as the government borrows for reconstruction and help the fight against deflation. What should the rest of the world do? In a show of sympathy, the G7 joined the Bank of Japan in selling the yen after it spiked dramatically. Such actions should be limited, however. Japan is too dependent on exports, and its priority should be stimulating domestic demand and ending deflation, not cheapening the yen. A better way for outsiders to help is to ensure that concerns over radiation in Japanese products do not become an excuse for protectionism. Other central banks face a more complicated task. Even as higher oil prices and hobbled Japanese production reduce growth, they add to mounting inflation risks. Britain is now fretting over inflation of 4.4%. But most rich world economies have ample economic slack, and in several countries, fiscal tightening will tug at recovery. Britain's coalition government has reaffirmed its commitment to austerity with this week's budget, and America has begun to cut spending. Both the Bank of England and the Federal Reserve should resist the temptation to tighten soon. The European Central Bank seems intent on raising interest rates next month. That would be a mistake. In the Eurozone, underlying inflation and wage growth are both subdued, and inflation expectations are under control. By raising rates, the ECB would strengthen the euro and frustrate the efforts of countries like Greece, Ireland, and, the next in line for bailing out, Portugal, to grow their way out of their debts. There is only so much economic policymakers can do about crises that spring from war or nature. In this case, the priority should be not making matters worse.